Welcome to Women Leading the Way radio show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations, and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Hey, good morning, everyone, and welcome to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I'm Michelle Berquist, your host today. We have, a great topic today, which is an organization and a leader who are really working and supporting autistic children. And so I'm delighted to say that our topic is leadership development for autistic children. Our leading lady today is the lovely, and I will say award-winning, Yvonne Bruinsma, and she's the president and founder of InSteps and the InSteps Academy. And Yvonne, say hello to all of our listeners, my dear.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
I'm excited to have you on the show. I know I want all of our listeners to know that you are one of our past award winners for the Women of Influence Awards, and well-deserved from all that you do with your nonprofit organization on helping autistic children. But just to set the stage, you know, can you just, in a brief sense, give us a little taste of what InSteps is all about in supporting autistic children?
Yes, so InSteps is an organization that provides in-home ABA therapy, applied behavior analysis therapy, to families and children who are affected by autism and other developmental disabilities. We also provide social skill groups. We have a licensed clinical psychologist on staff. And our goal is really to support families on their journey with autism and teach kids skills so that they can reach their potential. So that's our InSteps Inc. side, and then we also have a nonprofit private school that provides education to children with autism, especially right now kindergarten age.
And you know, can I ask? I mean, Yvonne, you know, there's seriously, it's like I can name on my fingers and my toes, and even more, you know, that keep coming of colleagues and friends of mine who have children that are autistic. I mean, you know, you're in this world. It's like, is this just something that's still trending up in the number of children who are autistic that we, you know, it seems like growing numbers. Is that the trend right now?
Yes, and that is the trend because, you know, when I started in the field about 25 years ago or so, we were talking about 1 in 500 children. And then it went to 1 in 250, and now it's 1 in 48 was the last number I saw. So it's definitely an epidemic, and it's very concerning.
Wow. I mean, and for anybody that, you know, there's just they're beautiful children and just, you know, and it got to be handled differently, but I know you know so much more. I mean, what was, if I can back up a little bit, you know, when you think of the scope of services, first of all, how do people find you? It's like, you know, if the trend is up, how do you, I'm imagining you might be reached after this radio show. I mean, how do you want people to find you? We'll have a link to your site on our show page, but is there another, you know, more direct way you want people to reach you as we start talking about, you know, autistic children and some of your services and what you do?
Well, the best way to kind of find out about our availability for services is to email intake@insteps.com. That's always the easiest way. But we do have intake forms on our website as well, insteps.com and instepsacademy.org. And there'll be numbers there to call to chat with our wonderful intake specialist, Jeanette. And, you know, I want to say also that it's not just for services, but we also really try to do a lot of outreach and helping people understand kind of what the services are that are available these days. We're lucky because California has a mandate to cover autism services. And so you can usually use your insurance, your regular health insurance to cover most of the services that we provide. So that's been a
very
real change because until 2012, that was not the case. And in some states, that's still not the case. So
wow.
We're lucky
and with the growing trend. Yeah, that's awesome for Go California. You know, go back to when you first started this. I mean, InSteps then is a for-profit organization. Is that correct? And then you have a nonprofit part to InSteps, the academy. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So kind of walk us through, because we have a lot of women who are, you know, they're business owners. It's like women who support nonprofits, you know, career women, that kind of thing. And, you know, what was, for you, what was the reason and kind of the tipping point for you to start InSteps? What was it? What was your background and why did you form this organization so long ago? I imagine every year has been just a different thing and a different step, but why did you start InSteps?
I come from the field of education. My PhD is in special education, and I worked with the Kegels at UCSB. They are now at Stanford, but they're a very well-recognized group of researchers together with Laura Schreibman at UCSD that developed the model that we use, which is a type of ABA called Pivotal Response Treatment. And I was just really inspired by their work and their ability to not just help the child, but really support the entire family. Their parent consultation and parent education were a very big part of their model. And early on, I believe that that was something that I needed to make sure lots of families had access to. And so originally, when I ended my PhD, we actually moved back to the Netherlands, and I set up a PRT center there that is still going strong. And then after 2 years, we moved back to the United States, and I worked for another agency helping them set up their programs. And then after about 4 years, I realized that I really needed to do the services the way that I thought it was best. And so I left there and started with, you know, two people in the back of my house, just serving a few families through what was then the regional center services. And that has grown in the past almost 10 years to, you know, we serve something like 300 families every day, and we have three locations, and we serve all of Southern California now. So it's been a very exciting expansion over time, with our goal always being to make sure that we provide just the best quality services.
Yeah, wow. And you do. I mean, I know you have a great reputation in Southern California. I know that because I have a couple of my clients and friends that actually work with you. And, you know, I mean, you mentioned something earlier, and this is what is just, it's heartbreaking, right? When you see not just the child that has autism, but what the families go through. And if you can, I mean, could you talk a little bit about that? Because that's what has just been so hard for me to see is how much it's impacted mom and, you know, even the siblings, you know, that are part of a family of an autistic child, you know, just because they're dealing with it just as much as the child is, and maybe even in a different way, right? You know, reputation and, you know, school incidents and things like that. I mean, can you talk a little bit of how much does it impact the family, and what can a family do as far as just some insight there? Because I know you guys do so many great things.
You know, I totally agree with you. I think autism really impacts the entire family system. If when you think about autism, you know, most people think about maybe some repetitive behaviors that kids have or the inability to talk and communicate. But autism also affects lots of other things that parents of neurotypical children take for granted, like sleep patterns or digestive issues or limited food intake because they refuse to eat, or they will only eat a certain food at a certain time from a certain vendor. And so it's very hard to cope with those types of things. I also realize that, you know, you're right, it affects the siblings, but it also affects everyone else in the community because oftentimes our kids have difficult behaviors, challenging behaviors is what we call that. And so, you know, you might get complaints from the neighbors about your child screaming, or you might have difficulty in the store when your child's having a tantrum. And oftentimes because you can't see that there is something going on with your child, there's a lot of judgment in the community. You know, the cashier who doesn't believe your child has any issues and doesn't understand why they're falling to the ground, having a tantrum, and then you having to explain that they have autism. And these can be very trying times for families. And, you know, if you're not getting regular sleep, if your child is not able to learn some of those daily living skills, your role as a parent really changes dramatically, because now you're responsible for dressing them, and they're not toilet trained, and they have challenging behaviors everywhere you go. And as a family unit, you start to become very isolated. That's a risk that I see a lot. And so one of the things that we really focus on is making sure that our children are supported in every environment, that we help parents go out and be with others and do community activities, that we make sure that, you know, marriages are stabilized, that we can offer that marriage and family therapy through our licensed clinical psychology, because this has an effect on your marriage. It has an effect on your other siblings and your other children. It also has an effect on grandparents sometimes. It can have an effect on neighbors, and it has an effect on teachers. So support is really needed everywhere, and I think it's easy to underestimate how what the impact is of having a child with autism.
You know, it's funny, I had one of my colleagues. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, it's funny because we just had a big fundraiser for the Academy a few weeks ago. And I told a story there about, you know, about when I had been in the field for about 10 years, I thought I was really well-versed in autism. And then one weekend, my sister-in-law called me and said her grandson potentially had autism, and could I come up and help them out? And I said, sure, you know. So I went up there to Portland, where they lived at the time. And her little grandson was 14 months at the time. And he, you know, he was just adorable. He, very infectious smile, very engaging once you got him going. But most of the time he would spend alone and lining things up and playing with the string that he would, you know, wave in front of his eyes. And he didn't really talk or socialize very much. And definitely a lot of signs of autism. And what was really hard was that, you know, even though I had been in the field for a long time, being with them for 3 days and three nights, I realized for the very first time how unbelievably devastating this disorder is, because the parents were not sleeping. He was up at all hours. They couldn't take him anywhere. Mm-hmm. It was very, very stressful. And I remember leaving there thinking, oh my gosh, I have completely underestimated what it means to have a child with autism. And I really need to realign myself and better understand what families are going through. It was like a big wake-up call for me. Even though
wow.
I had kids of my own.
I mean, it's telling. Geez. And, you know, I mean, and I have a family member that is autistic. And I just know, you know, the parents, they're dealing with it. They're, you know, she's developing as a young child. But the grandparents are just heartbroken. I mean, and whenever they show up, it's always she just wants them to leave. You know what I mean? It's like, and they want so much to have a relationship with their granddaughter. And it's just, it's virtually impossible. So, I mean, you know, to kind of look at this, and again, we're talking about business and leadership and you and building your organization and doing good. What are some of the stages, you know, that you've kind of gone through to build this incredible organization? I mean, how did you, if I can ask, how did you pay attention to opportunity or how to pivot or make the shift? Because, you know, it, like you said, it's grown now. I mean, autistic children are huge, right? That what's trending, not in a good way, but how have you paid attention to opportunities and yet you're still doing good? I'm just curious, you know, for anybody out there running a business, how did you shift and, you know, build your empire, so to speak, in what you're doing? What did you kind of pay attention to that's helped you along the way, if I can ask?
You know, that's a great question. And I think for me, what has driven our growth the most is the people that work with us. I think we are very much a people organization. And I always say, you know, Insteps is not a building or a bunch of toys or computers. It's the people that work there. And so we have really taken on opportunities as we grew internally our staff and as our staff and our employees became ready to take on challenges. And then, you know, we've also been driven, of course, by the changes in our funding environment. You know, insurance becoming the main funding source had a lot of implications and compliance issues associated with it. And it's
right.
really forced us to grow in different ways. You know, the last 6 months, we've really made a great effort to put more controls in place and have a balanced scorecard and identify our key performance indicators. And that has really sort of refocused us on making sure that we are a growing organization that is healthy in every way possible.
Love it. And can you identify maybe a couple of, you know, areas that just maybe were missteps that you can share, or just say these were such learning lessons? Because I always like to say I've never made a single mistake in business, but I've had thousands of learning lessons, right? It's like, yep,
yeah.
no mistakes here. It's like it's all a mindset. But I know there's just some of those learning lessons that stand out, you know, like, yeah, this is what I really learned the hard way. I mean, can you share one or maybe two of them that,
sure,
you know, what not
sure.
to do if you had some advice to share with others? What would that be?
You know, I think as a very fast-growing organization, we have gone from, you know, startup mode in the back of my house to a pretty, you know, large organization that is starting to mature. And I think one of the things that we really had to learn is, you know, I think initially when we were going from really small to medium size, I think we had kind of a focus on, like sort of micromanaging people and really trying to think about like, okay, what are all the steps in a task? And we would give people checklists and check their work and really, you know, kind of be on top of people. And I think that really hurt our culture. And I think, you know, in the last year or so, we've really started to move towards all our employees are capable. We should empower everyone to make decisions. We've learned about the decision tree and where everyone is on that decision tree. And for myself, like I've learned that I need to stay out of those leaves, that I can't have all the information to make decisions, and that I need to allow other people to make the decisions for their branches and their leaves, and that I need to focus on the trunk and the roots of our organization. And that's been very clarifying
wow.
to everyone.
Was that something? Yeah, well, no, it was just visual, something you guys came up with? Did you bring in someone? Because I'm like, wow, I've never heard it, anything about a kind of like a leadership tree, right? So you stay focused on the trunk and whatnot and the leaves or others. Was this kind of like a visual you guys came up with together as a team?
No, I think it's from, it's from Susan Scott's book. I can't remember the name of it, but it has a red cover and I can let you know what it's called.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hers was critical.
And she kind of talks about it.
Critical conversations or something.
Oh,
critical
yes,
conversations.
Like yes.
Yeah.
Or hard conversations.
I did not know that.
Or, yes. Yeah. I think it's in there. Yes. And
very
it's a good
cool.
way to
well,
think about it.
I love it. I've never seen that visual. Clearly, I need to reread the book because I've read that book and I don't remember that. That's really bad. I love that book. You know, what would you, again, it's like I think just in all the things we learned, but that was a big pivot for you. What was the most frustrating part of you shifting away from kind of like managing, you know, like you said, kind of micromanaging to being more focused as a leader? How difficult or what were some of the steps that you went through to make that a reality? That's a big pivot, you know, for us that start small businesses.
Yes. Well, I think the biggest step for me was to sort of trust and let go of some of the minutiae of every day. And I'm working on that every single day. I have by no means achieved that, but I think we have an extremely strong leadership team and we have worked towards holding each other accountable and saying to each other, hey, you know, you're in my leaves right now. It's my decision to make, or even to tell each other like, you know, why don't you make the decision? What's holding you back from making some of those decisions? And that I think is crucial. And one of our team members in our executive team is really into Brené Brown, Dare to Lead, and those
yes.
books. Are you familiar with those at all? Yeah. So
Very
she talks
familiar,
a lot.
Yes.
Yeah, so she talks a lot about, you know, holding each other accountable and being brave and having those tough conversations and being open and vulnerable to each other. And I think that she brings a very distinctive approach to our team in that sense. And I've been devouring Brené's books because I think she's onto something.
There's a lot of good books on there, and we're all in different places in business, you know. I think, you know, what's masterful is you recognize that it's like at every level of growth, you know, we as leaders have to grow differently, right? I mean, I do know one that's been difficult for long-term businesses is, you know, post-2008. Now we're, you know, 11 years past that, but so many business owners felt such responsibility, you know, with their employees and their team and not wanting to lay people off and see them grow and flourish. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, you as a leader. I mean, what do you do when things don't go according to plan? What do you do when, you know, let's say a staff member or a team member is not doing what the expectations are? How have you learned that kind of lane?
You know, I go back to what I'm best at, which is kind of going back to the connection that I have with people. I'm very much a relationship person. It's not for nothing that I'm in the service industry, of course. And I think one thing that has really helped us with keeping people accountable is, you know, the KPIs, because the key performance indicators, they really kind of help us to be the lines on the road that keep us going forward. And I think having everyone identify their own KPIs and connecting with people and making sure that they're heard and valued has really helped us keep people accountable in a very supportive way. You know, like if this was your KPI and you didn't meet that, what are some of the barriers? How can we support you through that? How can we help you reach your potential? Just like we do with our children.
Right. No, I like that. I like that. I want to talk a little bit about kind of the industry, right, for you and what you see for the future. Like, you know, for your future, do you guys have a business plan? Do you work off a game plan all the time as far as goals and objectives? It's like, talk a little bit about that. And, you know, it's always funny to me, Yvonne, I'm prefacing this because I can't tell you the number of women leaders, and men too, but women leaders who built multi-million dollar ventures, and they're like, yeah, I don't have a business plan. I'm like, what? That's what everybody tells you to have. But yeah, when we peel back the layers, everybody has a game plan of some sort. So I'm curious what yours is. Do you kind of have a good game plan, or how do you guys roll with meeting growth and goals and objectives?
That's a great question. We have our, you know, short-term balanced scorecard and KPIs, and then we also have our vision of where we would like InSteps to go over the long run. And that really ties back to what we started talking about at the beginning of our conversation, which is, you know, that support for the family and for everyone who is affected by autism. So our goal is really to be the wraparound service in a center of excellence for families affected by autism. And so one of the things, you know, we've talked about, you know, the in-home therapy, the parent consultation, the support for the family unit that is by the licensed psychologist. We would also really like to move towards doing more training for professionals who families who live farther away in our type of therapy. So one of the things that I've been working on is a book that is coming out in the fall from Brooks Publishing Company about our type of service. And to launch the book, we will have a big conference in Orange County with all these very famous researchers of the models of the type of therapy that we do. And we hope to then start also providing workshops and trainings to other professionals, not just for Orange County, but kind of nationwide eventually. So that's all part of our
congratulations.
Of our big strategic
that's awesome.
Plan. It's very exciting.
All roads lead to the conference and the book. I know what a big deal it is to publish a book, so congratulations on that. That's a big deal.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
It's like birthing a baby.
It's a labor of love. It's been 5 years gestation, so I'm ready to be done with it, believe me.
Yeah, I love it. And then you'll be working on your next one. You got it. You're only as good as your last book, from what I hear.
Yes,
anyway, too funny.
Yes.
Well, wait, when is the conference? When is the conference coming up?
It's October 21st.
Okay, wow. So, yeah, you've got a lot of things going on then in preparation for that, people coming in all over.
Yeah.
What, you know, in kind of like our final few minutes, because that's where we've only got a little bit of time left, it's like, you know, and usually when I'm talking with a business owner, we're like, oh, does the future look bright, you know, for the company and for the industry? And, you know, what's sad to me is that it's like, it's not the same with what you're doing. It's like, I want to kind of hear from you is what's the future look like? I mean, obviously exciting for InSteps, but bad because so many more children are getting diagnosed with autism. But what does the future look like, knowing you've got this conference and it sounds like you're going to be leading in your industry is the goal? What's going on with the future for children with autism and maybe trending things that are some good news or something?
Well, I do think that in the last 20 years or so, there have been tremendous advances in research on how to help families and children with autism. And early intervention, you know, we can now diagnose as early as 12 months of age. And the younger that we provide services, the more brain plasticity and the more advancement those children have typically. So early intervention has really changed the game for many children and families who are affected by autism. So I think that's a very positive outlook, and I think that's only going to get better because they're trying to diagnose, you know, at 3 and 6 months of age now. And you know, interventions are becoming more and more precise to be, you know, the best option for that particular child, because if you've met one child with autism, you've met one child with autism, right? It's like a fingerprint. They're all different.
Right.
So making interventions more precise will also help improve outcomes. In terms of our field is really going through a lot of consolidation. There's a lot of buyouts and a lot of roll-ups and equity money coming into our field. And it remains to be seen whether that will affect quality in any kind of if it will be detrimental to quality or not. I hope it's not. But, you know, we all know that when big money moves into an industry, sometimes quality suffers and profits become more important.
Yeah.
We certainly do not intend to go there, and we are not interested in really providing subpar services. And so it'll be an interesting field. I do believe, like, in a few years, it'll be a very different field to look at. Right now, there are probably about, you know, 40 agencies in Orange County alone that provide services similar to ours. I think that will reduce quite a bit as there are more buyouts and more consolidation.
And
so
you
a lot
know,
of
for
change.
You, what? Yeah, it sounds like a lot of change. And you know, that those are tough to kind of get around. You brought up some really interesting points. And you know, what do you do to kind of fuel your soul to keep yourself kind of fueled as you know on point, being the leader your team needs you to be? What do you do to kind of, like, you know, hold your sanity, if I can put it that way, on a daily basis?
On a daily basis, I try to have dance parties with my six-year-old. she really fuels my soul. She just makes me so happy. And not that my boys, you know, who are 14 and 17 don't do that, but they just do it in a different way than she does. She's just still so innocent and so happy. She makes me very, she just keeps me creative and active. So that's very, very good for me. But I also, honestly, I lean on my team a lot. You know, I'm only as good as my team is, and my team is only as good as I am. And so we work together very hard to kind of keep our open communication and make sure that we all support each other and that we're there for each other in the good and the bad, and that we can lean on each other to be the best that we can be. And that's been crucial to my development as a leader.
I think that's pretty powerful. And on that note, my dear, we are like out of time, but I want to thank you. You are amazing and wonderful, and the good you're doing is just making a heck of a footprint, so know that. I want to thank you for being our leading lady. And to our listeners, you know we're here every Friday at 2 p.m. and Mondays at 9 a.m., even on holidays, because today is President's Day. So thank you, Yvonne, for being on a holiday. But I'm working. We're small business owners, right? I always want to challenge us as professional women, because, you know, for Connected Women of Influence, we're all about women's advancement and our passion. And just please remember, you know, and my challenge to you, what are you doing to empower and support other women? So be with us, join us, and be a champion of supporting other women. We will see you on the next Women Lead Radio Show.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused, business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.